We had the elders to chant. There were 13 elders chanting, mm-hmm. and we have them on tape. We taped them. I had them on the cassette. As they were coming on, everybody was allowed to sing three chants. And right today now, there's none of them left.
They're all dead.
So they left their chants with me. And which was really very, very good that I had this.
That was Mrs. Sarah Denny, who has devoted much of her life to rescuing and transmitting the chants and dances of the Mi'kmaq. This is Rock Meets Bone. I'm Brian Guns. At a time when the Mi'kmaq people were in danger of losing their culture, a courageous woman called Sarah Denny stepped forward to rescue and revitalize many of their dances and chants. Recently, a friend of Mrs. Denny's, Ruth Holmes Whitehead, who is also staff ethnologist at the Nova Scotia Museum, talked with her and prepared this program.
Sarah Denny is a Mi'kmaq chanter living in Cape Breton, the first woman to be given permission by the Mi'kmaq Grand Council to chant publicly. She was raised at Eskasoni by her grandmother, Julia Bernard, who taught her Mi'kmaq dance. With her husband, the late Noel Denny, and their 12 children, she began a dance group which still performs for Mi'kmaq events. A devout Catholic, Sarah has been instrumental in collecting and publishing hymns of the church in Mi'kmaq. The more traditional music of her people, however, lies very close to her heart. Historically, only men have chanted in public, but Sarah Denny began to realize that the men who knew the old Mi'kmaq chants were dying without passing on their knowledge. She decided to do something about it. Traditional Mi'kmaq chants include welcoming songs, invitations to dance, marriage chants, chants for calling up power and for war, and the chants for the famous snake dance. Sarah's repertoire now includes even more modern compositions, such as this chant by Simon Cremo about his little white dog which broke his leg.
Now I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. Now I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. Now I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. I've got cheese and taste, Mary's cook what cheese. Gojua, enna 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 gejua, 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 enna
Whoever is the chanter sits in the middle of the floor. They usually are one chanter. They were never sitting around a drum, or they wouldn't. This is the jigman. Jigman was used it was banged like this and that, and they would be singing along with the jigman. And everybody would be having, that was the instrument used before we had adopted the drum.
A jigamakan, for those of you who've never seen one, is made from a rectangular piece of ash wood about 14 inches long. When pounded, ash separates into the layers of its annual growth rings, so the people pounded one in and left the other as a solid handle. Banging these layers of wood against the hand or knee produces this distinctive sound.
And they used it on the floor. They would be banging it on the floor and banging it on their knees or banging it on their hand. And they would sing out the chant, whatever they're doing.
Sing a little line of something and play it for me.
The first one I heard chanting was Ben Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the centennial, centennial year. Well, we were already dancing. We have been dancing for about couple of years,
mm-hmm,
before that. And then Nular, my husband, was doing the chanting. And then the kids that we were using were my kids. And the lead dancer was 2 year old. And she was Janice. She was Janice Denny. And the rest of them, they were all coming on the stage like steps. She was leading, and the steps go up,
mm-hmm,
and then they were all dancing because I had a dozen kids, and they were enough for a dance group. So anyway, early part of the years when I was younger, there was a celebration in Sydney, and I believe it was about 1937 or 38 when Queen Mother and her husband came, King George,
mm-hmm,
they came over to Sydney, and that's where I was, because I was brought up in Mimbertoo by my grandmother. And my grandmother was sewing all the year, all winter, and I was wondering what she was doing. She was preparing for the coming of the Queen and the King. And so at that time, I was only young, and we had when they had this celebration in Sydney. Sydney was celebrating after coming of the of those royalty, and anyway, we were at the Victoria Park, and we were fenced around. We had wigwams onto it, in there, and we lived there. We stayed there, and the stage was on the ground, and every once in a while, like 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, we'd be dancing just the kids.
When you were dancing in 1937, was someone chanting for you?
Yes, Ben Christmas was doing that. He was from Mimbertoo. He was the chief at Mimbertoo, and he was doing the chanting. And the only thing that we got was pop. Every time we finished dancing, there'd be a truck and a load of a crate of box, would come onto a stage, and we'd just go ahead and grab it. We'd be drinking pop. That was our only pay. And I remember, though, the people that were around, they would be throwing money on the stage while when we were finished. Like those days, 5 cents and 10 cents was really a lot of money. But by like 10 cents, like one penny, you could buy 10 candies for that. Right. But nowadays, you can't do that.
So that was the start of your career as a dancer?
Yeah.
So tell me about when you began chanting.
Well, that was after my husband, just stopped. He chanted, but I took over. We were taking our kids from place to place, and then I went over to that old man, Michael Paul, and I asked him to do a tape for me of chants. And then he said, I couldn't chant for you. He said, you have to give me give me something to drink,
before, if you have to, you know, you have to feel singing. When you, I know now that, you know, you have to feel that you want to sing. And, but if you don't want to sing, you cannot sing. You won't sing right because there's something wrong with your muscles or there's a tension there mm-hmm. that you couldn't do it. So he said, you got to get me some, a little bit of liquor, if you give me that. And, so I had to go to Sydney and get a bottle of Demerara rum. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was black thing, and it was a flask. And I gave that to him. Two shots, he took two shots. And then we started to sit up. I started to sit up. And I had this tape, you know, this round thing,
yeah.
the tape recorder. It was not like the cassette. It was a different old thing.
A reel-to-reel.
Reel-to-reel tape. Yeah. So he did that. He did the chant. So that's what he told me first, that this ego is the opening chant. It didn't make any difference what you're doing. You could be opening a ball game or a banquet or anything like that. It's an opening chant. And it's a friendship chant too.
Sarah Denny performed the ego, the opening chant, for an event at the Naropa Institute, Halifax, in 1988.
Ego.
See Noel Paul mm-hmm. Denny, and he was really he felt sorry for myself, for me, and he felt sorry for the chants that were lost. He said nobody has been chanting since we were told to stop dancing and stop chanting. It was wrong. Anyway, he said the time is getting on now, we won't be able to chant anymore.
This marriage chant was fortuitously collected from Andrew Battist of Cape Breton, who died only 2 days later.
Now which gul ag nahl badus tut, now which gul ag badus tut, messing out this gul badus tut, messing out this gul badus tut. Make some me egg na heavy des tut, now which gul ag baby des tut, make some me egg baby des tut, now which gul ag baby des tut. Could you wear? Could you win a good to a nina? Could you win?
When they said it was wrong, because every time they were they were up to something, like, you know, some kind of celebration, even a celebration of a child, a birth of a child, or they had achieved something in, or a good hunting, anything like that. They would celebrate and they would dance. Like if it's a good hunt, they had a chance to dance to, mm-hmm. and they'd be cooking and eating all night. And, you know, apparently that it was forbidden to eat all night and dance all night for somebody. But with us, it was like maybe you didn't eat all day, so you eat in the night. There's plenty of meat, and everybody's enjoying it, and everybody's have a share of it to eat. And it was sort of like a grand get-together of mm-hmm. good hunting. And they would chant. And it seems to me somebody else was telling them that it was wrong. I think everything that our native people do at those days, it's wrong. It was wrong. Somebody else would come around, you're doing the wrong thing. You're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
Take, for instance, in the church too. When they were, one time ago, early part of my stay over at Escasoni, when the priest came to be in, like, you know, they didn't used to come, and they would come.
About
3 months or maybe, mm-hmm. Maybe 6 months. At least it wouldn't go for one year, that they wouldn't be there. There'll be somebody there, and then they're gone. And when he started saying the mass, the Indians started to sing, because that was their job. They could sing anything. They could sing the gospels. They were singing because there's no priest, and the grand chief was the one that was singing the gospel for each Sundays. Mm-hmm. They were going to church, and when the priest came, said, "What's that noise? Who's making all that noise?" And he said he came to do the mass, and he could very well do the mass himself without all that noise. And he told them, "Whoever wants to do that, there's a door. I don't want that." So they just stopped singing, and they really believed that this was it. You know, if the priest tell you to believe that at those times, you're scared. At that time, the religion was in the scary part, but nowadays it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's all loving and caring and sharing and all that. But those times, it was scary. And you have to get scared too, especially the priest, when they tell you something, you get scared. Because they're right.
Yeah.
And you were wrong at all times. You were wrong because you're a sinner.
Mm.
which was, you know, true at that time. But nowadays, they could, you know, if they tell you something different, they know very well there's lots of people that are educated now. But them days, we were afraid of everything.
So that was one of the reasons why chanting and dancing started to die out?
Yeah, it started to die out.
Well, it looks pretty healthy nowadays with the work you've been doing.
Yeah, it's getting to be healthy because people are really enjoying it. Even our fiddler, Lee Harvey, he plays the chants on his fiddle, and everybody gets up. They sound so nice, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody chants, and you know, they get up.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, which is really nice.
So you have a dance group now. Now that your children are grown up and have children of their own, you're teaching other children?
Yeah. Anybody that's interested, anybody that's within a age that is not a show-off, I take them. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't want nobody showing off or pushing some other people around, you know. Or just a person that one would like to walk around.
Yeah.
Walk around, I don't take them. Soon as I know what his personality is,
if they're willing to listen and willing to do the dance, and, you know, we'll get along really mm-hmm. good. This chant here, it's sort of like an invitation chant. It invites everybody within the crowd there to come and join with us to dance. And then it tells you that you could go and get your sister. It doesn't make any difference who it is, or your brother. Bring them along and dance. Come and join with the dance. That's the Chugwaluk Wejijuo. And it says that Chugwadik Chugwaluk, come and dance. Okay? It's a little faster dance. Chugwadik Chugwaluk Ka Chugwadik Chugwaluk Ka Chugwadik Chugwaluk Ka Chugwadik Chugwaluk Ka Chugwaluk Wejijuo Chugwaluk Wejijuo. Look at Jiju, oh Chuba, look at Jiju, oh Chuba, dig Chuba, look at Kajua, look at Jiju. Get to Enina, get to Enina. Chwa look at Jiju, The first elders' conference that was held in Antigonish, we had the elders to chant. There were 13 elders chanting, mm-hmm. and we have them on tape. We taped them, and then we had them, I had them on the cassette. As they were coming on, everybody was allowed to sing three chants. And right today now, there's none of them left.
They're all dead.
So they left their chants with me, and which was really very, very good that I had this. The women weren't allowed to chant. The women were chanters, but not publicly. They would chant in the house to teach the kids. Mm-hmm. And then when they grow up to be a man, they already know the chants because their mothers chanted for them. As time went by and then we were losing this, we're losing even the women, men weren't chanting. And then at the meeting, I asked if I could come in and do some chanting. I was on the agenda that I was going to do that. And they accepted me, and I started chanting. And they said, it was wonderful. It was good that you could do this. And they asked me where I got the chants. I got them on the tape. I said, I got them on the tape. And I'm going to be doing this. I want to do it. And they said, go ahead, do it. It's great. And then ever since then, I start gathering some more chants here and there. And the men weren't, they were not scared to pass on a chance to me because I was not going to, not disrespect them. I respect them very highly. When you go to a grand council, like, you know, their chiefs, and ask them to do what you want to do, well, if you're good enough to chant for them and show them what you know, they'll really let you go ahead and do it and see what you could do with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do your best anyway. So you get a permission to do it, then you're all ready to do it. But then again, if you're really just trying to, you have to do it for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your, because it's the gift given by the elders too. And I'm going to do the last one now. It's going to be Glanude. It's a little bit slower. This is one of the Ben Christmas chants, late Ben Christmas. I got that off of the tape.
A chant with very similar words was collected in 1923 in Cape Breton as a song which ghosts sing to themselves because they are lonely.
When you're chanting, you're in trance. You're not chanting for me, like when you see me looking over there, I'm just doing the chant for the gift that I had received myself.
We'd like to thank Sarah Denny for passing on her art to all of us, and Ruth Holmes Whitehead for her valuable help with this program. Rock Meets Bone is produced with the assistance of the Naropa Institute of Canada. Thanks for listening.